Welcome to Life, Lessons, and Laughter with your host, Glenn Ambrose.
From the language, oh, your broadcast is live.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Life, Lessons, and Laughter.
Wow. We have been talking already for 7 minutes, right?
Yes.
Let's do it again. Well,
yeah, I just looked up and I'm like, something looks off. and all of a sudden I'm like, yeah, where are the comments?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, crap. Yeah, so, hey, hi, everybody. Welcome to Life Lessons and Laughter. I don't know if the first few minutes will be in the recording or not. I don't know.
Oh, yes, Laura, we might need to start it with laughter tonight.
Yes, it's Life Lessons and Laughter, and this is a testament to the laughter.
All that important stuff you said, right? Okay, so let's
So this is Sonia. We're neighbors. She lives in the DR in Cabarete, and we met on Insight Timer and about a year ago when I was visiting, and she's a teacher there as well, and she's wicked cool. That's my Boston accent. She's wicked cool. And she was just nice enough to tell us a little bit about herself when I blindly forgot to hit live. So now we're live, and we won't go into it in too much depth, but I'll ask her to repeat a little bit of it anyway to get you guys back up to speed.
Okay, so Glenn asked me to tell you what I do, and so I don't even remember what I said in the moment, but ultimately we were just about to talk about. So I was saying that it's not so much about what I do, it's more who I am, when I'm doing, and I've been doing energy work for a very long time, for over 20 years. And it's really about using the tool that is necessary in that moment and knowing which tool to use. And so my background is in chakra psychology. I know a lot of other tools. And I was just about to share that analogy. That's where we were. People don't even know what we talked about. It doesn't matter. the traveling. Like you have one language and you travel. And with that one language, you get along somewhere. You can go places. You can speak to people. But if you're only very limited in one language, you cannot go into such depth in a country or with a person. And for me, I see the tools that I have, let them call NLP, EFT, psychodrama, family constellation, whatever, just to name a few, there are more. So it's different languages. So when I go out and I speak several languages, I can go deeper and I can communicate with people in a deeper way. But it's not necessarily the language. It's just my way of connecting and reaching them on a deeper level, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. And I think, so do you do, would you say it is something, you know, I know you learned a lot of techniques in the past, but would you say that you find out the right tool for the right person by more asking questions and diving in? Or is it more intuitive? Or is it a little bit of both?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's a little bit of both. And I think ultimately the best tool is the constant, relentless, continuous inner work. And I think you can relate to that too. It's like, it's not so much the tool that I learn. It's me transforming my own shit. And through me, keep growing and keep looking and digging deeper and refining that with the tools. So it's a mixture. I do very much intuitive. When I'm with a person, I just intuitively know, but I also, of course, use questions and other tools to find out more. But it's more like I'm tuning in to their field and where they're at. And one of my skills or gifts, if you want to say it, is that I can perceive what's behind the surface, behind the obvious. And so they might say something, but the truth behind it is not what they're saying. But I tune into that, and then, you know, gently and obviously respectful, use whatever tool is best for them to open up.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, and that's it. I was laughing when you said that sometimes people say something, but that's not actually what it is. It's underneath. And I mean, that's probably 90% of what I do. When people are talking, I'm like, I don't like saying I'm not paying attention. I am paying attention. I'm just not paying attention in the way that most people pay attention. I'm just kind of monitoring the energy of what they're saying, and I'm waiting for things to capture my attention. So, like, as people are talking, a lot of times it's just buzzing by, and I don't really latch on to much that they're saying, because most of it's just not important, because it's details. So then all of a sudden, like, something will capture my attention. It's like, oh, okay, that needs to be tweaked, or that's a sign as to what they really need to talk about or something, you know? So it's, yeah, that's, so I, right. I think everybody that does our type of work does that at least to some level.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's also because, I mean, 90%, I mean, it's the work, 90% is moving through the protection mechanism, the resistance. And we all are the same. That's why I'm such a huge advocate of getting help, counseling, therapist, coach, whatever you want to call it, because we are blind to ourselves. We want the change, but the protection mechanism is too strong. And also, often people need to talk about it, because they don't even know what's behind. Because if they would see it, they would have less of a problem. But so that's why you need someone that can see beyond. Because let's say someone struggles with depression, that can be anything, right? And to really find the cause, what is it? They don't know it. Right?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite quotes from Einstein. One of my favorite quotes altogether, but it happens to be from Einstein, who said, you can't fix a problem with the consciousness that created it. You know, there's a reason that you're stuck, and that's because you're going at something from a particular perspective, and you don't, if you knew the proper perspective, then you wouldn't be stuck. You would just take the proper perspective, you know? So yeah, getting that outside perspective and somebody that's, you know, preferably somebody that's, you know, practiced doing this type of work in the past, because who can see it, you know, and somebody that's, you know, somewhat emotionally detached, because emotion clouds our vision. This is one of the reasons why we can't see. And when you go ask people, like a lot of times what I notice, and I'm guessing, and I'll ask, you know, your opinion on this. What I've seen a lot is when people go look for help, they go ask people that they've known the longest, which is really not a good qualifier whether they're the right person to help you, because they have so much emotion around you. So if it's a parent or a sibling, like, they have a whole perspective based around you. They're on your side. Screw everybody else. They're not always the best one to say, hey, you need to change this, you know, or a friend that's, you know, emotionally about as deep as a puddle. That's a good person to go have drinks with. It's not a good person to have a heart opening, you know, insightful conversation with. And they're like, well, geez, they should be able to do it. I've known them for 40 years. It's like, that's not a qualifier.
You know? Yeah, I agree with you. And also to add to it, it's of course, it can be helpful depending on the friend to get feedback, to get, you know, like an opinion. But of course, if it comes to working through your trauma, through your shit, through deep transformation, they're not only qualified, they're not qualified unless they are, but even if they are a very skilled therapist, it's not, family is not the right person to be. Because there's too much attachment, there's too much conditioning, it's very difficult to stay kind of like objective. And I personally, but I'm very picky, obviously, you know, it's like, this is my jam. So I have a few people that I work with, very few people, very picky. But I personally, only someone has credibility for me who is doing the deeper inner work themselves. If someone doesn't work on themselves, like take themselves on, constantly look at themselves, like really do the work, they have no business giving me any advice when it comes to my own personal development. Like in other areas, yes, please give me. But if someone just, you know, I read a book and they said that, so you should do that. It's like, yeah, but I think it's really important to get help in general if you are in a dark place or if you're struggling with something. And it's good to have someone skilled and capable of really holding space for that person, because it's more important for the person to feel safe. And
oh, yeah.
For me personally, it's more important to help the person than, so it's not about them liking me, because I'm very loving, I'm very respectful. And at the same time, I'm also challenge them and let them look at what it's important to them and not just being nice. And that takes a lot of skill too. You know, to really, because you become a projection. I mean, you know this, but
I do.
Well, it's a lot of work for us to kind of navigate through that. But ultimately, it's really about helping anyone to see who they really are. And it takes someone from outside to see us sometimes, because it's like we are so full of stuff. And you said something important about, you know, we are with that quote, you know, you can't fix the problem with the same consciousness that was created. From an energetical perspective, how I perceive energy and work through energy, and considering that every chakra and energy center has its own consciousness and energy, from an energetical perspective, as the problems that we experience, the problems, the pain, the negative, whatever you want to label it, it's usually in the lower chakras, and it's about repolarizing the system so that you can literally unhook from that so that you do get a higher perspective. And I teach that a lot. Like, it's really about moving the energy up and repolarize to a higher consciousness, because otherwise you are in the mud. As long as you are in the mud, you can turn around the mud, you're still in the mud. You got to get first your head above water or above mud. And then you might still be in the mud, but consciousness is there, and then you can do something about it. So it's very real from an energetical perspective, that image, that you can be in the mud feeling like you're drowning and you only see that, and you can get above the water. And then, of course, you know how to swim.
I love that analogy. And this is honestly one of the reasons why I decided to start having people on for things like what you just said, because I've never heard it put that way, but there's many, you know, in being on a spiritual path as long as I've met a lot of different people, and I'm fully aware that there's all kinds of different perspectives. And what I love about it is that when you go deep enough, you land in the same place. So, you know, from what you were just saying, like, when I first started life coaching years ago, I started getting the comment, how can you do that for a living? Like, that must be horrible, like listening to people's crap all day and navigating the worst parts of their life and all this stuff. And I mean, like, after I heard it a few times, I was like, I think I I think I should think about this and understand why it doesn't feel like that to me. You know, so when I went in, I got a visual of basically people being stuck in the mud, like in a pit of mud, and me standing like on the shore, on the side, with like throwing them a rope, going, "Hey, come on, I'll help you out of the mud." Where I, you know, with the main part being, I don't climb into the mud with you, because I'm of no use to you there. So I'm not going to climb into your problem. I'm not going to climb into the energy of the problem and mush around and be, "Oh, what should we do? Oh, you know, I'm of no use to you there." But I'll stand on the shore and I'll be like, "Come this way, do this, look at it. What if you looked at it this way? Could you come, you know, stay?" I always stay in the solution and invite people into the solution from where they are. And it just reminded me of that, you know, how you were saying it energetically.
Yeah. Yeah, super important and absolutely right. And I think ultimately, and, you know, different people are just different and use different tools. But what you said, if you go deep enough, it's all about the same, but not everybody resonates with everybody. Like everybody has a special gift or expertise. And I think one of the things why it's not a terrible job, so to say, is when you are able to manage your own energy as a therapist. I work with a lot of coaches and healers myself, because that's often the case, that they don't manage the energy and they take too much on, actually. But that image is so correct. You don't go into the mud. However, in my case, at least, because I've been in the mud and still sometimes am, I'm very transparent. I never lie. I would never trust anyone who says, "I have it all together. I'm never reaching the mud anymore. I'm holy, like I'm enlightened." Like, I would not trust anyone like that, because as long as you're in a human body, you will face certain challenges, but you're not just caught in the mud like when I was 20 years ago. But because I was in the mud, and maybe you too, Glenn, is we can help them because we understand it. I think it's very difficult to move anyone out of the mud if you don't really get it, and also to hold space. I think one of the things that I'm really good at, or what is very healing, is to hold space in acceptance with what is in that moment, and then to help them out of the mud. So
Yeah, being in that is, you know, I came into spirituality through recovery, and there it's discussed often. It's, you know, it's the whole program of AA and all the other 80 or 100 12-step programs that came off of it are all kind of based in the mentality of, you know, like, if you've been through it, then you can help others because you've been through it. You know, and I mean, it's, yeah, in the beginning, it's not too difficult. Like, I saw a couple therapists in my life that, and had discussions with a couple more that knew nothing about alcoholism. And now they had studied alcoholism. They were alcoholism counselors. And I think that some people can actually do an okay job in certain situations with that. But with me, I could sense that immediately.
Yeah.
That they hadn't been through what I had been through. Yeah. So it's, you know, so it's like, I'm like, yeah, I can't. So I think, yeah, having been through difficulties ourselves is absolutely true. And I think 99% of the people, I would agree with you also what you said about if somebody says they have it all together, don't trust them. I would say 99% of the time that's correct.
Yeah,
there's probably like 5 enlightened people on the planet right now, but they're very hard to find. They're probably in the Himalayas somewhere.
And I don't think they work one-on-one anymore with anyone.
No, probably not. It's true. I still go through my stuff, and I'm transparent with it.
Exactly. And if that's whatever I say or believe does not mean you anyone has to believe or take it on. That's just my perspective right now. And it might change as we are all growing, right? But yeah, I agree with you. And I think it's really important that we find someone that resonates and, you know, knows the struggle. I'm so with you. I mean, alcoholism wasn't my issue, but I know addiction. I know severe depression. I know severe self-hatred. Not wanting to, like, I went through a lot of trauma and pain in my life. And therefore I, as same as you, you can help people. Like, I can help you. But I don't know any of it. If someone comes and says, oh my God, I am so depressed. I want to die when I wake up in the morning. And I say, oh, that's not good. Let's change that. You know, like, just change your thoughts. You know, like, just, you know, put your gratitude in there. It's like, well, that's not going to help, because I know what it means to be in depression and you wake up in the morning and you just want to die. Right? So, you're absolutely right. So besides of five enlightened people, maybe you send one to me.
as soon as I meet him. but so I think this is a perfect segue to, like, you know, you and I have both, well, I'll speak for myself and you know, but I know you to some degree, but not a ton about your past history. But so I'll speak for myself. You know, I've been through major anxiety issues with panic attacks. I've been through depression, suicide attempts, suicidal thoughts for long periods of time, and, like, you know, all that type of stuff. So when we were going to talk, and you know, from what you've said, you have too. So from, you know, what we're talking about, obviously there's a ton of crap going on in the world right now. This is, if, you know, if there were such a thing as challenging times, I think this would qualify. So, you know, so how do you, you know, how do people manage their energy? How do they keep their energy up or bring their energy back up? Or, you know, I'm not sure which door you want to come in this topic, whatever you feel like talking about. But, yeah, how, you know, how do you manage your energy with things like anxiety or depression or something like that in such challenging times?
Such a great question. I want to tune into that moment because there's so much to say about it. And I think one of the things is, first of all, like, if anyone really struggles from this in a very serious way, get help. I also say, get help. Whatever, you know, like, you are, if it's something that you're challenged with and you don't have help yet, get help, because it's very hard to go through this by yourself. How I will answer a little bit about how I manage it and how I help my clients, because that's maybe most tangible, if it's all tangible for those who maybe don't know energy work. One of maybe the toughest things, but very important, is to practice a lot of acceptance. Now, that is challenging when we are depressed or anxious, because often that comes with judgment, pressure, and hopelessness. Now, those don't go very well with self-love, acceptance, and compassion, right? So, but that's kind of like the doorway, and one can start little. One of the tools that I use, and I have been using for 20 years and plus, that changed my life, is meditation, but a particular type of energy-based meditation. Now, what it does exactly what I spoke about with the mat. So it's like a four energy flow kind of type of meditation, to keep it super simple. I can only stretch the surface here. But the first flow is, you go in, you kind of like go in and discover what's actually going on inside of me. And then you go, you bring the energy up, you really move the energy up, you unplug from the lower. You open up your third eye, you connect to your crown, you go up to your higher self, and you connect to something higher than yourself. That's for me, like, energy-based meditation. It can be God, universe, source, wisdom, whatever that's for you. But then connecting there is to really also unhooking. That doesn't mean it's gone. You still get to do the work why it's there in the first place, but you get a different perspective and you are not drowning anymore. Mm-hmm. And then to bring that higher energy down, because as I speak, I do, you know. So go in, you bring the energy up, you bring the energy down, and then that's the energy, you bring that out. And often the third or fourth is actually missing for people who have done a lot of work already and meditate. But to start to do something every day that helps you to connect with who you are beyond the panic, beyond the depression. Anxiety and panic is a good example. From an energy perspective, when we are in panic or anxiety, our energy spins very fast and our base chakra is collapsed. So we are not grounded, we are not centered, we don't have any stability, and it feels like like panic, right? When we are panicking. Right. So the first thing is really to breathe. And that sounds so simple, but I think the breath, conscious breath, can save your life.
Yeah, I would agree. It's foundational.
Three breaths can, before you respond, when you get triggered, before you do anything, you just take a deep breath, relax your body physically, and then, of course, there's way more to do, to say, but meditation, breath, and looking deeper, what's the underlying issue of being depressed, anxious, or in panic to begin with? And usually that's something that's got triggered from the past. So that's just to mention a few. So do the inner work, meditate, and breathe.
And that's beautiful. I think it's, again, this is why I love, this is why I decided to do this and have conversations with people like yourself, is because it's like we are, I mean, it's, you know, we both are spiritual teachers and healers or life coaches, whatever the hell word you want to call it. But we're very different in what we do, but like as I just sit back and I listen to you, and one of what I try to do is find, I'm always looking for similarities, and I always see them because they're always there. So as you're, because I know that I don't, when I'm in that situation, I don't do that exact same thing. So I'm like, okay, does this remind me of anything? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's this, we do the same thing. We just do it in different ways. You know, technically though, underneath what it's doing, you know, the first thing that you have to do is stop drowning, you know? So it's like, if you're focused on the problem and what's happening, you're of no use to yourself or anybody else. So it's disconnecting from that first. And you can do that through breathing, meditation. I mean, sometimes I'll do it. Like the first thing I do is if I notice that type of energy is overtaking me, I just hit the brakes and go, okay, stop. And I recognize that my mind is going, is not in a good neighborhood. Like nothing good happens while I'm in this state of mind. It just doesn't. So I have a rule, like as soon as I recognize that I'm in crappy headspace, and it could be a bad mood, it could be, something deeper, like, levels of anxiety or depression or whatever. If something like that happens, I just hit the brakes and go, okay, wait a minute, Glenn, you are in bad headspace. And I recognize that. And I go, you're not allowed to think of anything or come to any conclusions, because nothing, you're in negative headspace. So nothing but negativity is going to match that. So I cannot think my way out of a panic attack or think my way out of depression, because, you know, the thoughts are caught up in anxiety or depression. So the only thing that's going to match that is energy is anxiety and depression thoughts. And anything that isn't like that, like if I'm all, oh my God, I'm anxious, you know, that's usually the future. Depression is often the past. So like if I'm caught up in anxiety going, oh my God, and I go, Glenn, it's going to be okay. I'm like, shut up. you know, it doesn't match my vibration. So I kick it right out. So that's, I just hit the brakes and go, wait a minute, you cannot think right now. You can't come to any conclusions about anything right now. And that's how I unhook, you know, and then I stop and breathe and center myself and ground myself, you know, and then, you know, I mean, sometimes if I get donkey kicked, like I might not be able to do anything that whole day.
Yeah.
I wait until the next day to try it, because I'm like, I try to get out certain tools, maybe meditations, some breath work. Maybe I'll go help somebody else. Sometimes that's like the only thing I can do with in the middle of any major issue, like I'm talking severe panic attacks, severe depression. The only thing I can still do is my job. I can still work with people regardless of what's going on with me personally, because as soon as I do, I lock onto that person and everything about me disconnects from me and it connects to that person. And sometimes, like I look, like if I'm going through a difficult time in my life, I really look forward to my clients even more, because I'm like, they're my vacation from what's going on inside of me. You know, I'm like, because I stop thinking about me and I'm focused on them, yeah. You know, and it really feels good. And sometimes that's enough after the session.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I'll be like, you know, 15 minutes later, I'm like, oh, that really unhooked me. I'm good. Like now I'm in good headspace. Now I can look into things and do more of the deeper work that you had mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you mentioned that helping someone else is super helpful when you're not. And sometimes that doesn't work either. Like what you said, sometimes you just don't do. Like, you know, and then you allow yourself to have a day where you don't get out of bed or whatever. You know, like, I think from an energetical perspective, it's always important to get things moving again, because especially with depression and anxiety, from an energetical perspective, it's like energy is not moving. We feel frozen inside. We are blocked. And it can become a vicious cycle. So then, because even you know movement is good, but you don't feel like moving, you don't feel like dancing, you don't feel like exercising, you don't even want to get out of bed sometimes, right? So, but even if you only have a little consciousness left, otherwise just indulge in it, get help, and that's okay too. It's okay to sometimes, you know, we've done this work for a long time, we get out of it much quicker. But I had days this year, and you know it, I went through severe, challenging times this year, and I had days where I did not leave the house. And that's just what it is. You know, I was in real deep, challenging transformation, and that's okay too. I think self-acceptance and compassion is key.
Yes.
Some sort of movement, because from my perspective, one thing that I can see when it comes to, let's call it depression. What is depression? It could be sadness, loneliness. There's so many. I like to be more specific so that you can do something about it. But there's always an underlying issue that you are not living a truth. You're not in flow. You're not in alignment. You are not in truth. Now, that gives you enough to look. What's the underlying issue? In my experience, I'm not saying that's for everyone, but for me and everyone I've worked with, a depressed person is an angry person, but not able to resolve that, or is stuck anger, unresolved emotions, a feeling of I can't do anything about it. And it goes so deep sometimes. So once we get that energy moving again, it can shift so quickly. Like you said, you know, like you go help someone and suddenly you feel like, oh my God, I'm good again. No?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like I want to say it might have been Abraham Hicks. I'm not sure. But many years ago, I saw the scale of emotions, and depression was way down at the bottom. And anger was starting to get like halfway through, it shifts to more positive emotions.
Yeah.
And anger was getting closer to the to the happier emotions, which surprises some people. But anger induces movement a lot of times, which is what induces change. If you get angry enough, a lot of times you change. And so that's why it's a little higher. Depression is way down at the bottom because of the non-movement aspect of it. That's the most dangerous thing there is, because if you think energetically of the universe as a whole, everything is in constant motion always. It's the nature of the universe. It's the nature of the world. It's the nature of the earth, the people, the nature, everything. So everything is in constant movement. And if we are not, if we are not in the flow, like you said, if there is no movement, non-movement equals depression, you know, and that's way down at the bottom. And it's, yeah, there is no real way out of it except to get moving. This is what, like I used to say, it's you can't think yourself into better acting. You have to act yourself into better thinking. Because a lot of times that's what keeps people stuck, is they're sitting on the couch going, I'm depressed, I should do something, but I don't think I'm ready, and it doesn't sound right. No, I don't think that'll work. I don't think that'll work. I don't feel like doing that. It doesn't seem like it'll make sense. Like, it's all this thinking. And you're never going, if you're really depressed, you're not going to be sitting there on the couch and go, you know what? I feel like going for a jog and helping 13 people today.
No, I feel it's all night.
It's not going to happen. So it's like, to induce that movement, it can be anything, you know, you can take a drive through a drive-through just to get off the couch, out of the house, into the car and down the street, even without interacting with anybody, or, you know, just do anything that induces that movement. And then all of a sudden, you know, you can go down energy roads with this. You can go down spiritual talk with this. You can go down psychology with this. You can go, and it's all the same no matter what road you go down. Like, you have to start moving to get that flow going and to just, you know, to get you moving out of it.
Yeah, totally. I want to just add to something that you said. I have something in my eye right now, so I'm just kind of trying to. Anger. I want to add something to anger, especially women often have an issue with that because we are conditioned to be nice and to please, right? So a lot of us grow up not being able or having to express anger and being okay and safe to feel like we're safe to express anger. So all the issues that we have as an adult is everything that happened when we're very little, when we are conditioned. Now, anger is not a negative energy. I want to be very clear. Anger is a negative emotion. It's energy. And of course, I'm not talking about the anger that's uncontrolled, unhealthy, and you go and hit people. I'm not talking about that. And I'm not saying do that, right? But from an energetic perspective, you said that in some way. Anger wants to move through friction. Depression does have no, like, there's a one-way street to nowhere.
Right.
Anger comes up. Also in children, when we grow up very little, very young age, we get angry when we want something we can get, or we want to pass through something, and we need anger. We need anger. Also, we need anger to be able to protect ourselves from a instinctual level. Again, I'm not talking about going out and punching people. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the energy of that you have it available also to protect yourself and setting boundaries and not just being a pleaser, say yes to everything, get sick, get depressed. If someone is in chronic depression, you gotta look into your unresolved anger issues, period. Because there is one. And it's very, very unhealthy. And I'm one of them. I was never angry when I was younger. Like, I was a sweet girl, pleasing. I had no boundaries. I was even proud. Listen to, like, you know, this 100 million years ago, it feels like a few lifetimes. But I remember when I started to go on the journey, you know, I hated myself. Like, I hated myself so much that at some point, and you either I kill myself or I learn how to love myself. That's where I come from. Now, I realized I was always nice, and I was always pleasing, and I was never getting angry, and I was even so proud that I was, you couldn't get me angry, you know? So it felt like it's a good pattern. So society also rewards that, you know? So when you have a functional, happy, nice personality, it's even more difficult to get rid of it. If you have a fucked up personality and nobody likes you, it's easier to get rid of it, right? But if society teaches you to be nice. Now, it got to the point that I couldn't say no. And I thought I had no anger. And then I explored and kept working. And oh my God. I mean, I opened the box of Pandora and it wasn't pretty. It was also very painful. But I learned to have that energy. I'm not going out punching people, but I'm also very clear. You don't mess around with me. I'm very clear with boundaries now. I love teaching about boundaries. But just because I was so unable, we get like anybody who is not able to have that energy available, not that it runs your life, but you have it available, you will get abused, you will be resentful, you will be constantly pleasing, you will get sick, because if you're not able to set a boundary, your body will in some way, or it comes out in really, that's a totally different subject. Let's just bring it back. Sorry, Glenn. I was just like, oh my God. I'm so, so passionate about it.
It's interesting because like I was basically the opposite. I was very angry as a child and I had difficulty playing sports because I played sports all growing up, but my biggest issue, which everybody in town knew, was that if you screwed with me, you could trigger me. And if you triggered me, I would go after you. And if I went after you, I'd probably get thrown out of the game. So this kind of, in a small town, it happened a fair amount of times, you know? So anger was my go-to, you know? We all have a go-to. It's a defense mechanism. And, you know, when I was young, I tried freezing and I got beat up anyway. I tried running away, fleeing. And I got beat up anyway because they're faster and older and they caught me. So the last one I had was fighting back. And it was anger expressed, you know. So, I mean, I expressed tons of anger. I became a portal for rage throughout my life. And, you know, and it's very difficult because, I mean, everybody has a defense mechanism, a go-to. You know, and it's either freeze or flee or fight.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, fighting is the one that gets labeled as anger, you know, and it gets a bad name a lot of times because, and with good reason. I mean, you know, if you're, external, it's not internal, and it causes more damage when you act on it. So, of course, it gets more of a bad rap because it basically deserves a bad rap. But as somebody that comes from that, as somebody that was my defense mechanism, my go-to, you know, I think it's important for people to understand out there that, like, you, like, as somebody's, and this is not an excuse for poor behavior. You shouldn't allow yourself to act out of anger. But if somebody, expecting somebody to never, like if their go-to is fighting, which I think as we get to adults, it's not usually actually punching people. It's more verbal. Like expecting somebody never to verbally lash out when that's their go-to is like looking at somebody that either just sits there quietly or walks away and looking at them saying, don't ever sit there quietly again. Don't ever walk away from a situation that you're uncomfortable in again. It's the same as looking at somebody that verbally lashes out or lashes out in anger saying, don't ever do that again. It's harder than it seems if that's your go-to.
Absolutely. And I think also, what you said, the anger towards yourself is expressed in different ways. And I think same as you, you had to do your work. Lashing it out is exactly the extreme. Like the extreme is like too much or too little. Yeah, both is not good. Both is not good. I'm not saying this is better than this, by the way. It's like, you know, of course, if you go out and kill people, there's no justification for that.
We can give a collective thumbs down to going out and killing people.
But only hurt people hurt people. So you got to do the inner work. And it's also interesting because women and men are conditioned differently. Not everybody, and I don't put people in the box. However, there are archetypes, and it is just true how evolution and how education, and I'm not saying one is more screwed up than the other. We are challenged in different ways, but it's more often or less often the case that women are, you know, out there. They are just generally more going inward. Makes also sense from an evolution and energetical perspective, because energetically, also from the chakra system and instincts, like men were designed to hunt, to provide for the family. Now, men have energetically a smaller heart chakra and a smaller belly and a bigger solar plexus. Why? Because otherwise they wouldn't be able to go out and kill an animal to guarantee the survival of the family. So there is purpose. There's purpose from an evolutionary perspective. And now the consciousness comes in, because even though we are not like Neanderthals anymore, the program still runs. Now, so the consciousness to bring, hey, okay, that amount of anger out there is not good. Let me do the work, but I still want to have it available and not cut it completely down. And I think, you know, and then, you know, everybody's individual, but you're so right. And thank you for sharing, because sometimes, you know, it's just like, yeah, everybody's different. So we all get to do the work.
Yeah, we all have our work, I agree with you that boundaries is one of the most important things to be taught. And like somebody that came from, like I feel that we're saying the same things. Well, I know we are up until now. And I think that we're saying the same things, with this too. It's just, we have different ways of teaching it. So like, when I teach boundaries, the words that I say are a little bit different, but they still get you the same place. I also agree that I think that anger has its place. Like, I'm not trying to achieve a life where I don't experience emotions, even the ones that people label as negative.
God, you would be a robot.
Right. So there's nothing wrong with experiencing sadness and anger and frustration. Like, that is going to be part of life. And I'm not trying to live a life that excludes that. But when I focus on setting a boundary, maybe it's maybe my perspective needed to be what it is because of my anger past. So like when I set a boundary, I have to set my boundaries out of self-love, not anger. If I go into anger, if I set a boundary with anger energy, it doesn't go well.
So I
make sure that like I differentiate, like myself, I've needed to do this. So this is what I do with my clients because I learned it with myself, right? So I have to clear out and go, okay, do I have anger in this situation? Yes. Well, how do I work through that into a place where I'm not a victim of this situation and I can just land in a vibration of pure self-love? And then once I can get myself in a space of self-love, then I set the boundary out of self-love and go, no, you can't do that. And why? Yeah. Well, because I love myself and I just don't allow that. Thank you. Have a great day. I think I'm going to go get a tuna melt. And then I just move on with my life. You know, it's like, so it's just, but for me, if I go to set a boundary out of anger, it's going to be like, hey, you shouldn't do, it's always about the other person when I'm setting it out of anger or frustration. You shouldn't do that to me. I'm not going to allow you to do that to me. Like, it's about them. As soon as I set it out of self-love, And it's like, no, I just don't enjoy experiencing that in my life. Thank you. And then,
no, thanks.
And I don't wait for their agreement. You know, a boundary does not wait for the other person's agreement, you know? So it's like, then you just move on with your life. But yeah, it's, you know, so that's how I teach it. Because like I said, with that past, so much anger, I had to be really clear that I wasn't setting any, you know, acting out of it.
Absolutely. I don't think boundaries are set with anger. But you need, again, like, let's replace anger through energy. And it's like a standing up for yourself. And I want to add something that you remind me that's so important. It's about taking responsibility. Like, here's a huge little difference. Like, when we project it on the outside, it's like, are you, you're angry with you. You know, it's like, you can own it. There's a huge difference between, blame, never blame. It's like, oh, you make me angry. No, nobody makes you angry. It's your anger. And even the only difference to say, I am angry. Am I allowed to swear on your show?
We already have a few times, so that's a yes.
It's like, anger is not nice. And it's like, I'm fucking angry. Right? So, but if I say, I am angry, it's like, I am angry. I'm not blaming it on anyone. I'm not putting it on you. It's like, you know what? I'm so angry right now. I gotta take a moment. You know, it's like, this.
Right. See? Yeah. Right? And that's, I agree with you because that's exactly what I have to do as well. It's like, I don't bypass my anger. Exactly. I don't pretend that it's not there. I own it and I sit in it. But, like, most situations, like real quick ones, like getting cut off in traffic or something, is only like 20 or 30 seconds worth of energy. So, like, let's say a personal thing is bigger. So let's say you have a whole, like, 90 seconds of energy or 3 or 5 minutes of energy. If you just sit there and go, yeah, there's anger, I'm experiencing the energy of anger right now, and that's okay. And you allow yourself to feel it. And I mean, I'll pace around my living room swearing every other word. You know, the drunken sailor from Boston comes flying right out, and it's an F-bomb every other word. And it's like, you know, and then, but then once I release that energy, you know, then like I did it, I did this in a very memorable situation to me, like, I don't know, like 4 years ago or something. And I was marching around my house swearing and swearing. And at some point I was like, okay, Glenn, like, do you want to continue feeling this anger? And I was like, yes, I do. And I walked around swearing for another few minutes. And then I was like, okay, Glenn, do you want to continue feeling this anger? And I was like, well, no, I guess not. You know, so I was like, okay. Then once I got all of it out of me, then I was able to sit down and go, okay, so what is triggering this anger? Well, what's triggering it is my perspective is saying that this person did something to me and I'm a victim of this person. It's usually a victim, you know, a version of victimization to some degree. So I was like, okay, how can I look at this that it's still true? I'm not blowing sunshine up my ass. It actually has to be true. But a different perspective where I'm not a victim of this person anymore. And it's like, well, this person probably didn't like their job. It sounded like they didn't. And they probably were just trying to get me off the phone. Yeah, that makes sense. It probably really had nothing to do with me. It was just, it had to do with what was going on inside of them. And I'm like, yeah, this person doesn't even know me. Of course it didn't have anything to do with me. So, oh, okay. So then once I changed my outlook to where I wasn't a victim of this person anymore, where it was an impersonal thing that took place, then I could, you know, then all of a sudden I wouldn't trigger more anger whenever I thought about this situation. Or whenever somebody with the same person's name came by me, you know, because I had changed the way I looked at it to where I wasn't a victim. So it wasn't going to be a trigger. It was about right at the end of child support. So if I didn't do that for the rest of my life, every time somebody said child support, I would have been like, what? Child support? Freaking hate child support. You know, like, But since I shifted it to where I wasn't a victim of it, then, you know, I don't have that trigger moving on with my life. And I expended the energy of anger that was triggered initially.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you. Hey, Glenn, we could talk for hours, but hey, we took enough time for the people. I don't even know.
Yes.
But maybe we can do this again sometime. But yeah, I think what you just said, just to wrap this up, about it's about taking responsibility. What you said is like, hey, I'm triggered. This is my anger. What's going on underneath? It's not about me. It's not even about this person. It's just triggering something from the past or something in me. And to let it out for a while. I always say to like, scream in a cushion. If you kind of like, oh, you scream.
Yes.
Let it out first. Don't stay stuck with it, because then you want to bring consciousness in. And then go look under what's the underlying vulnerability. Because where's anger, there's hurt. There's no anger without hurt underneath. But it's easier to be angry than to feel the pain. So you got to first. And then you hold space and heal what's actually really underneath. So, again, it goes back to doing the work, being in acceptance with what is. Emotions are okay. Everything is okay. We are all human beings. We experience all the same stuff, all of us.
And I think if you watch my shows in the future and the past, I have a tendency to wrap things up, like you just did. And I'm not going to do that, because I really enjoyed the way you wrapped that up. So I'm like, yes, yes, Sonia, yes. So I'm going to leave that wrap up for the total wrap up. And, you know, it's the only other thing I'm going to say is it's, you know, really what we started with, you know, get help. It's not, I mean, the way I look at it is, a lot of times, especially when somebody first starts working with me, if anything ever gets in the way of our sessions, it's because life gets busy or out of control or something, you know? So, and I always tell people, like, no, don't stop your self-care when things are getting more difficult. It's even more important than why. It's like we have to flip-flop our priorities. Our self-care has to be number one, and we have to act as if it's number one, you know? And so, like, to me, it's when people are like, well, things are a little tight, so I'm going to stop life coaching. I'm like, that's the last thing you should stop, literally. Like, I would not pay my rent. Because happiness is more important than the roof. You know, maybe pay rent. But anything else, like, I'd eat Chef Boyardee if I had to keep my life coach going. Because it's what is more important than walking through your life having peace, love, and happiness in your heart on a consistent basis? I mean, you know, so.
Amen to that.
Amen.
Amen to self-care.
Thank you, Sonia. And we were rolling, so I didn't stop, but I did. Laura was nice enough to say we're going to start with laughter tonight, because I completely forgot to hit the live button. And Glenn has a gift to hear the truth behind words too. So you do. And because Laura knows you, so she knows that you do. And she was saying, I do too, so thank you. Chris, great show, thanks. Cindy, namaste. Namaste right back at you, Cindy.
Namaste right back at you. And may I ask your audience something?
Sure.
So, and we might not have time to do that, but I always love to hear, like, what's your biggest takeaway from today?
Yeah.
Like, what's one... Like, share with us, like, one nugget. What's one takeaway from today's show out of all the goodies that we shared?
All the goodies, yes. So we will.
And can I want to share something with you that I heard as an analogy about self-care. You ended it up with it. So we all have this here, right?
Yes.
How often do you let this phone go empty without charging it? I'm asking the audience, not even only you.
Oh, like, I was like, oh, damn it. Do I got to answer this?
How often do we not charge it? We don't. It's always charged. God forbid our phone isn't working.
Yes.
So imagine, like, you charge your phone more than this body had gets to be charged by self-love, self-care, quality time, invest in yourself. You know, you can't pay for life coaching. I was just such a good analogy. It's like plug in your own to recharge yourself. Okay.
Yes, and I do a very similar analogy with fuel and car maintenance. It's like, what do you do to your car? Do you get a tune-up every once in a while? What's that, like hundreds of dollars? You put in gas every week, fuel. You know, you have the oil change. All this stuff you do to maintain your car so it will work for you. And we don't do that for our bodies, you know, like the internal, which is the most important, I think. So let's see what some of the comments are. There's more than one way to get the same job done. Amen. Yeah, it is. Like, and I think, you know, I think that's part of our job is finding the right way for our client. You know, we don't like be like, oh, you have to do it my way. And no, you find the right way for your client and it's different for everyone. Step out of depression and feels.
Yeah, great takeaway.
Yes.
I'm sure. And
Ruth. Not charging. But Ruth is on the right path. And Ruth is on the right path. I've known Ruth for many years. And she's she made a breakthrough that I'm not going to get into. But years ago, like when I was around the time I was leaving Rhode Island, and I still remember that breakthrough that she had. It was a really beautiful, wonderful thing. So I'm sure she's still on the right path. Move into anger. Yes.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for watching. Thank you for everything.
Yes, my pleasure. Thank you for joining me and chatting with me. Thank you, everybody, for watching. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people are going to be listening to this over time. So thank you guys, too. And we're out. So thank you, everyone. I'm going to click my little ending video, and we'll talk with you soon.
Looking for more? Check out over 200 episodes of Life Lessons and Laughter, or click the link in the description of this episode to connect with Glenn directly.